From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
It is Tuesday night, and the big story on Action News tonight is a bombshell out of Philadelphia City Hall.
Last week, Philadelphia Police Commissioner Richard Ross resigned. In a lawsuit, he was accused of ignoring sexual harassment claims. A lower-ranking female officer alleged Ross ignored her complaint as retaliation for ending their affair.
That was sort of the headline-grabbing part of it.
That's WHYY's Ryan Briggs, who's been reporting the story.
The larger story, the larger lawsuit here is still that there had been essentially a failure across the entire police administration to address similar complaints for years.
Why have similar allegations been ignored for years? And is this a sign of a larger problem in the ranks? Today on The Why, breaking down the boys' club. We'll hear more from Ryan in a little bit. First, WHYY's Nina Feldman starts us off. And just a heads up here, you're going to hear some archive audio. That all comes from the documentary Lady Law. Okay, here's Nina. So obviously this has been a very high-profile case, but let's back up a little bit. Has the police department faced a lot of lawsuits over gender discrimination over the years?
Yeah, in fact, women are on the streets patrolling as a part of the Philadelphia Police Department today because of a class action lawsuit back in the 70s. Women sued to be a part of the police force. It all started with one officer. Well, she wasn't an officer yet, but she was employed by the Philadelphia Police Department. Her name was Penelope Brace.
Many of the men have no objection to us becoming detectives, but they have certain doubts about the capabilities of women. For example, some men have said, I just don't want to work with a broad. I consider that ludicrous.
It was 1974, she worked on desk duty, and she wanted to be promoted. She wanted to move up in the ranks.
And at the time, women could really only do desk duty jobs, right?
Exactly. They could really only have administrative duties. They couldn't be out on the street. And so she and then a group of other employees at the police department at the time filed a class action lawsuit based on gender discrimination, saying, you know, we can't be promoted because we're women. We're hitting the glass ceiling at ground level.
And how did the city respond to that lawsuit?
So there was a trial where the top brass testified against women's ability to be on street patrol.
In a deposition taken during the Brace U.S. Justice Department case, the following testimony was recorded.
A variety of relatively baseless claims were made at the time about how women would be bad at being police officers. A lot of it was based on physical attributes. The police commissioner at the time, Joseph O'Neill, took the stand.
Question. Can you tell me why, in your opinion, women can't handle detective and patrol sector work? O'Neill. Because God, in his wisdom, made them different.
He said estrogen prevented the formation of proper muscular strength. It also made women too emotional, overruling their judgment in serious situations. He said, you know, there are certain periods of the month where women would not be cut out to be officers.
Because they would be incapacitated in some way by having their period.
Yeah, exactly. Basically making the argument that when women are on their period, they can't do police work. Mm.
Okay, so Commissioner O'Neill's on the stand making these inflammatory statements about women's physical and mental attributes. What else happened at the trial?
In 1976, the Department of Justice, who had taken the side of the women filing the lawsuit, ordered the Philadelphia Police Department to hire a pilot group of 100 women to put out on the street, try them out as officers, and see how things went.
On May 17th, the first group of female cadets was sworn in at the Philadelphia Police Academy.
I. Name?
Mary Coffer.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will well and truly perform.
For the first time, all cadets, regardless of sex, received the same training.
So that was the first class of female police officers that Philadelphia saw patrolling the streets. So I talked to Maureen Rush.
I am Vice President for Public Safety and Chief of the University of Pennsylvania Police Department.
In 1976, she was one of that class of 100 female police officers that was, you know, the inaugural class in Philadelphia on the street. She recounts that, you know, women were given kind of the short end of the stick in every way. They were given no patrol car, so they couldn't drive. They were not given partners.
We worked alone. We were not allowed to work with men.
And they were often assigned some of the most dangerous neighborhoods in town.
We worked seven particular districts that were high crime districts.
And the worst shifts. That first winter when Maureen was working, she said it was one of the coldest winters on record. So again, she's on foot in the cold, you know, at night alone. And the top brass reached out to all the women who were in that situation and said, listen,
if you sign this piece of paper, this statement, we will let you go work in the juvenile aid division, which meant
you can come inside. You can, you know, sit behind a desk, warm up. All you have to do is sign this piece of paper that says, in my opinion, women are not cut out for street duty. And she said, hell no, I'm not doing that.
It's like, screw that.
She said there are 100 women in that class. In her estimate, about 30 signed the paper and 70 did not. And she was obviously one of the 70 that did not.
So the city has this this pilot group. And what happened with the lawsuit?
So eventually the city settled in 1979, and the department agreed to stop excluding women from its high ranks.
The federal diagnosis, O'Neill's department was guilty of discrimination.
And to include at least 30% women in its next round of hires.
And upon graduation, equal assignment in all of Philadelphia's 22 police districts.
So at least nominally on its surface, the department was striving for some degree of inclusion.
So now women are able to become police officers. What happened after that? How were they accepted by the city?
On the one hand, this is a victory. Women are allowed to be officers. You know, it's lauded as a major reform in the department. And that was great. And it was progress by all accounts. On the other hand, you still have an environment that historically has been a male-dominated profession. And that sets a certain kind of tone for an environment. Kathy Spiller is the head of the Feminist Majority Foundation, which houses the National Center for Women on Policing. And she mentioned how historically there were still a lot of little signals here and there that showed that women were not welcome as police officers.
You know, classic sexual harassment remarks, grabbing, touching, retaliation, threats.
We've seen now, as evidenced by the number of harassment claims that have come through, that issues of sexual harassment and gender-based discrimination in police departments have been serious and high in numbers. But I think in the past, the tactic has sort of been to create an environment where people don't feel comfortable coming forward, people stay silenced, and there are major consequences if you do speak up. So that's kind of kept women from feeling like they could speak out against this type of behavior in the past.
This is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. I've been talking with Nina Feldman about the history of female police officers in Philadelphia. Now, Ryan Briggs joins me to talk about sexual harassment claims against the department in recent years.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
So what have we seen in terms of allegations, in terms of lawsuits coming out of the department?
Well, we looked at just the suits that were filed by female police officers alleging sexual harassment since the beginning of 2018. And in just that kind of year and a half span, you've seen about 9 of these suits. So that's one almost every other month. Mm. And again, those are just allegations at this point. But if you go a little further back, through the history of the cases, that the city settled since 2007, there have been about 35 settlements, and that's millions of dollars that the city has paid out to specifically female uniformed police officers that allege some kind of gender-based discrimination, some kind of sexual harassment.
And well, so, what kinds of things have people sued for? Like, what are some of these more specific allegations?
Yeah, it's definitely a laundry list. The through line in almost all of them would be, you know, the failure of kind of the administration to take complaints about sexual harassment seriously. But within those complaints, it runs from sexual assault to groping to derogatory comments. In one of these instances, this was the largest employee payout in city history, was to a female police officer named Michelle Vandegrift, who had said in a lawsuit that, you know, her commander raped her. And eventually this suit goes through the court system and the city pays her this, you know, phenomenal amount of money. It's over $1 million. But her supervisor that she had made these allegations against, is still on the force.
So, like, overall, how much have these lawsuits cost taxpayers?
Yeah, it's millions of dollars. I mean, we found at least $2.3 or $4 million that have been paid out since 2007, and that's probably understating some of it. It's a significant drain in terms of resources, but I think that legal experts would also say that in a lot of ways, the payments are kind of a form of the city writing checks to get itself out of these problems. We wrote a check, the problem went away, now we move on. And then it happens again, you cut another check, and you move on, and then it happens again, and you see this pattern kind of over and over again.
So we've been talking about litigation that the police department has been dealing with. Does it seem like there's also sexual harassment happening that's not going to litigation, that's not even being reported?
That's always a hard thing to measure, but the short answer is yes. The numbers that Ryan's mentioning are settlements and lawsuits filed. We're not even talking about formal complaints that are lodged internally in those numbers, and we're not talking about general internal complaints that aren't formally lodged, that are just something that people accept within the context of the department.
Yeah, it's just part of the culture.
Exactly. We talked to one former officer, Krista Hayburn.
I was a former Philadelphia police officer
who served in the department for 10 years. And, you know, she described the culture as one of just being a boys club.
Things like this, harassment, misconduct, anything that is going against the normalcy of we don't tell on other cops is frowned upon. It's just not something you do. It's like you don't go and tell your mom on your brother and sister. You kind of keep that to yourself.
So what did she do?
In 2008, she filed a lawsuit against her former superior. She says that he assaulted her in his car outside of a party.
He had taken me across the street, leaned against his Dodge Durango, kind of scooting down so that he could meet me at eye level, and said to me, you know, that he had always thought that we had something together. And he kissed me with an open mouth, open tongue, and I was kind of taken back. I knew right away. I knew immediately when it happened that I would never be able to report it if I wanted to stay on the job and make this my career.
She filed an internal complaint and the officer was demoted. But then she says she was retaliated against. She was injured and her medical benefits were questioned as a form of retaliation, which she outlines in her case.
So a lot of these women say they spoke up and then they got punished for it. That's the recurring theme. And now someone's claiming the commissioner retaliated against them and he steps down. But the question is this going to change the culture at the police department that a lot of people say he hasn't adequately addressed to this point?
I think there's a good question that you could ask as to whether Ross stepped down because he had been alleged as part of a, you know, systemic failure at the administrative level to address these issues, or whether it was because this filing included personal details about an alleged, you know, romantic affair with a subordinate. I don't really get the sense that if there hadn't been that detail, the romantic angle, that he would have stepped down. You know, Mayor Jim Kenney has said that it's a priority of his to reform the way that the city as a whole handles these kinds of harassment complaints. And, you know, he had noted in his statement about Ross's departure that, you know, that hadn't really happened in the police department. But I think it's also worth noting that, you know, the issues we're talking about have survived numerous commissioners and haven't really been addressed for decades. Even, you know, Ross's replacement, interim police commissioner Christine Coulter, you know, she's named in the suit that took down Ross, as are, you know, other high-ranking police and department officials.
Right, who are still on the force.
Yes.
One thing I would add is that when I talked to Krista Haburn, she really lamented the fact that Kenny's attitude towards Commissioner Ross resigning was one of, what a shame. What a shame that this had to happen. What a shame that we lost a good guy who was doing good things for the department, good things for the city, to this sort of casualty almost.
Best commissioner in America.
Yeah, that's what he had just called him, right? Like the week before.
Right. And I think that was a lot of people's attitude, was too bad this had to happen, where Haburn's opinion or attitude was Ross leaving is not solving the endemic problem of harassment within this department.
So what would accountability have looked like in for the commissioner?
The mayor firing him. The mayor not standing up and, you know, saying how great of a job he's done.
He's not actually taking accountability. He's doing the same thing that the settlements do, which is getting out ahead of a problem and making it go away without actually having to take responsibility for it.
Nina, Ryan, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
WHYY's Nina Feldman and Ryan Briggs. They had help reporting this story from Max Marin and Michaela Winberg, reporters with WHYY's Billy Penn. The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yakov, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Xavier Lopez, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. We had editing help on this episode from Danya Henninger. Do you think Ross's resignation will change anything at the department? Let me know. I'm at Shai Ben-Yakov on Twitter. See you tomorrow.